The other thing I noticed, and it made me smile, was you had in your about page, made with love in Texas. And obviously Houston, big energy sector, but talk to me a little bit around Texas, because I think it's top of mind for a lot of tech people.
We didn't see anybody else, hardly anybody else in Houston doing that. And so we wanted to show that Texas software could be just as cool as software built on the coast.
Right.
And so we blast that ahead on our site as well. We're definitely proud of it.
I think that's awesome. And I think that more and more people are realizing how the environment in Texas, the business-friendly environment, the talent that is more than willing to move here because cost of living is cheaper and cost of living is great, and the independent nature of it, like it's an entrepreneurial state, like just to the ethos of it. Like it might as well, if you're pledging allegiance to the Texas flag, might as well also give an Ayn Rand book, and that's like all bases covered. Like that's really the, like, and it, I didn't.
You just need to understand it.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to SaaS and Scotch. I'm TK, founder at Unstoppable. On this podcast, I talk about the two things I love the most, SaaS businesses and Lagavulin Scotch. On today's episode, we have Sameer joining us, founder of Molecule. We'll be digging into his founder story and the incredible work he's doing at Molecule with his team. Sameer, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
I was checking out your website, and every single time I discover a new SaaS business, I'm surprised, but not surprised at just how many niches there are when it comes to SaaS, how many industries and verticals that software and software as a service is disrupting. It's truly incredible. And yours is a testament to that.
Yeah, the world's a big place. And one of the things that's really cool about our industry is, I like to think of it as a plumbing of the world. It's sometimes not exciting and it sometimes is, but it's real.
Absolutely. Maybe let's take it from the top. Tell us a little bit around, you're at Thanksgiving, you're with grandma. How do you explain to grandma what you guys do over at Molecule? Cool name, by the way. Love the name.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Sadly, I do not speak Urdu. The translation to my grandma would be very difficult. Might involve a lot of gesticulating with my hands.
So you get the whiteboard out in front of grandma in the middle of Thanksgiving. It's okay. Here's what's going on.
Molecule is what's called a CTRM or an ETRM. That's energy trading and risk management software. So our software helps the companies that buy and sell large amounts of energy and other energy related things to track how much of it they have and how much they've made or lost. So if I'm your electricity company, for example, I'm buying huge amounts of electricity months in advance, days in advance, and sometimes in arrears. And Molecule helps them to figure out how much did I buy? Did I make money on it? Did I lose money on it? Et cetera. At its most fundamental, that's what it is. If it wasn't grandma, but instead maybe a 20-something, I would say maybe like a Robin Hood for commodities.
Okay, got it. And who are the users of the platform? Is this people deeply into the energy industry? Is it like a very specific part of their system of record? Is that how it works?
That's right. It is definitely a system of record. It oftentimes it'll sit alongside an SAP or a NetSuite or some big steel version of an ERP. And yeah, the users tend to be the people focused on either marketing, speculating, or procuring energy. So our users will be at small companies like hedge funds and large companies like the largest private equity companies in the world, who you probably know use our software as well.
Got it. I want to dig more into Molecule, but before we do that, this is so specific, like what you're working on. Maybe that doesn't feel like it to you. To me, it does. And it's, man, this is a really specific industry. How did you come up with this idea? How did you decide that this is the thing I'm going to go do? Tell me a little bit around your art of the start.
Yeah, absolutely. I graduated from the University of Texas back in the middle of the dot-com boom. And when you're living in Austin, at least at that time, there weren't a ton of jobs in Austin, but the folks in the oil and gas industry out of Houston were definitely recruiting there. And I got picked up by a company that made software for oil and gas and electricity trading. I stayed there for about 8 years. I went off to Michigan to get an MBA and a public policy degree, and managed to graduate in the middle of a recession again. And
timing is impeccable.
When I got back, I was like, man, we make terrible software. Like, the rest of the world uses way better stuff than this. We make terrible software and we charge $20 million a pop for this. Man, I need to get in on this. And we can do this better. I was out of Bayou, like Minority Report, hands flying around. And that really was the genesis of Molecule. Like, we could do something better. Modern technology has evolved. And energy and finance are super interesting because they're the plumbing of the world. Let's go mix all this together and make something better than what came before.
Yeah. Did you find when you started out that this industry that had terrible software, and we all know industries, like I've been part of finance, they make terrible software. Mm-hmm. Did you find that they valued more beautiful software or more elegantly designed software? Did you find that was something at a human level? They were like, yep, this is awesome and we're going to pay for it.
Not really.
Okay. That's where I thought it was going to go. So tell me more about that. Like, how did that your thinking evolve then from there?
So at least at first, not really. You know, hey, the software is better, the software is more evolved, this software is easier to use. Went and talked to traders and companies that use this type of software, and they're all like, look, it's, I don't know, it sucks, but whatever, we're not ripping this thing out and replacing it with something new. So I think what we learned in that journey was it's rare that you come across a company where you can convince them to rip out what they have and replace it with something new. Usually it's driven by them. There's some dynamism where the vendors finally ticked them off, and then you need to be there when they start looking.
Yeah.
And then once they've started looking, they use interesting proxies for talking about the usability and the prettiness of the software. It's there in the conversation. Like, we have this one feature, it's like a natural language trade capture feature, where normally somebody would have to, you know, fill in like a dozen combo boxes. Instead, they can type it in using natural language. Jaws drop when we show that in the demo.
Right. That's like the money shot in the demo.
That's the money shot. And people are like, wait, can you do that again? Wait, what can you do to that?
Yeah.
That was like the first feature we made. So that feature by itself didn't sell anything.
Yeah.
But when put on top of a platform that's credible, in a situation where the buying decision is on hand, then we hear the things about usability and how great it looks and how awesome it is and how easy to use. And there's all sorts of like little ways that you hear it without people saying, damn, that's beautiful. It's so you hear it, but it's an adder. So we had to get really real first, make the thing that worked, and then the effort that we put into usability came into play.
This is one of the most heart-wrenching things as founder I found, and this is true in any industry you're in, where the product isn't the thing that wins the deal. It's the underlying business transformation, change, why it's a 10x better workflow. That's what really gets them to the table. And then the features can win you over after that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So a big thing that we see happening in the energy industry, probably literally over during the time of COVID and maybe a little bit before that, is a lot more attention being paid to electricity, certainly in North America. And well, we're particularly good at electricity, mm-hmm. partly by nature of the fact that we're a modern system and can handle lots of data. We're a system built 30, 40 years ago, just doesn't handle the same amount of data as well. Honestly, that was nothing we did. It was just the fact that we started this decade, and so our tech supports it. So yeah, it's the underlying industry business transformation that now we find ourselves at the right time and place with a full pipeline of folks who are looking for something to properly handle electricity in 2020.
Yeah. I want to dig a little bit more into what Molecule does, but before that,
sure.
something stuck out to me in, on your website, two things. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk a little bit around that. I'm big on macro trends. Successful startups mm-hmm. always tap into macro trends, and there's sometimes multiple macro trends that puts wind behind your back. And mm-hmm. there's two things that stuck out on your website to me. One was your messaging was a lot about migration to the cloud, which I think, I guess you're like, they use old software, they're paying $20 million. If SAP is involved, there's already like archaic floppy disks
right.
sitting somewhere. So that's a big trend. That's probably powering some of your growth. The other thing I noticed, and it made me smile, was you had in your about page, made with love in Texas. And obviously Houston, big energy sector, but talk to me a little bit around Texas, because I think it's top of mind for a lot of tech people. I spent the last 9 years in San Francisco and then moved to Dallas, Texas last year before it was a cool thing to do. But Texas, there's a thing here. So tell me a little bit around that, because I think the cloud thing we're all bought into, and that's good, but let's talk about Texas.
If you are born in Texas and raised and schooled in Texas, there's this weird, perverse sort of pride we have for our state.
Yeah.
It's, we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, and then we learn the pledge to the Texas flag.
No way, there's a separate pledge for that.
Yep.
Wow.
Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one and indivisible.
Wow, that's incredible. Did you know so, Texas is the only state that can secede from the United States?
Yeah, I think that's actually a misnomer. I think the actual thing about it is that it can split into five.
Oh, interesting. Got it.
And Austin, I'm sure, would end up as its own state.
Okay. Go on. So tell us, you pledge allegiance to Texas, and you're totally right.
So
like,
there's
being an outsider, like you feel like it's another country. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, totally. I've moved away from Texas 3 or 4 times, and usually within 18 months, I'm back. There's something about the spirit of the state, something about the independent spirit, the practical nature of what we do. The big industry in Texas has been oil for 100 years, for better or for worse, and cool, but it's the thing that makes the world run. So there's just something practical about what we do here. Cost of living is low. People are friendly. People are generally able to find good opportunities if they're in white collar positions, things like that. I think there's a bit of jealousy here, certainly in tech, towards the coasts.
Right.
Right. Or the East Coast and the West Coast. Hey, look, we're tech too, and we're doing tech for real important things. Pay attention to us. And when we started Molecule, we had all this really sexy branding, and we were building this really cool software. We didn't see anybody else, hardly anybody else in Houston doing that. And so we wanted to show that Texas software could be just as cool as software built on the coasts.
Right.
And so we blast that ahead on our site as well. We're definitely proud of it.
I think that's awesome. And I think that more and more people are realizing how the environment in Texas, the business-friendly environment, the talent that is more than willing to move here because cost of living is cheaper and cost of living is great, and the independent nature of it, like it's an entrepreneurial state, like just to the ethos of it. Like they might as well, if you're pledging allegiance to the Texas flag, might as well also give an Ayn Rand book. And that's like, all bases covered. Like that's really the ethos of it. Like,
you just need to understand it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let's dig into Molecule then. How's business? What stage are you guys in? How's the journey been?
Yeah, sure. So business is good. I think what we've seen in our industry is that you would see this on our investor deck, that the exits from our industry are truly enormous. There were three, I think, over the last 4 or 5 years at close to $1 billion or more. So they're sizable exits. The thing is, these companies took 20 or 30 years to get there. So they're slow growing and they're giant. And I think we've managed to pick up the pace a little better than some of the giants that came before us. Deal flow is fine. COVID's been a little rough. We had a deal that was getting ready to close, and then the target companies or the customer's stock price dropped by 75% in a week.
Yeah.
Clearly that deal did not close.
Right.
So COVID's made it a little rough. And I think the other thing that's been challenging for us is that there isn't a lot of interesting venture money focused away from the coasts, really. There's a few, but there aren't a ton. And so I think for us, we've had trouble finding the ecosystem to support us, whether it be for talent, for fundraising, et cetera. There have been a lot of halting efforts to try to build that. And I think there's a new one that just recently got started, but it's been very hard to attract external funding.
Do you think that's changing now in a post-COVID or mid-COVID, whatever this era is called, as more deals are done over Zoom and investors, like literally companies are being started everywhere?
I don't know. I don't get the sense that's the case. Okay. I think what we see during COVID is that, similar to large tech companies, it's a winner take all thing. If you follow, I have on my RSS feeds, I have VentureBeat, and sometimes I have TechCrunch on there, et cetera. And you'll see the funding announcements of companies come through. They had gone a little quiet for a while. And now, 2 weeks after the election, large rounds are being announced again. So I think it's venture and tech, certainly away from the coast, has been a winner-take-all thing for a while. And so if you've got a company that's hyper-growth, 100, 200, 300, 500,000% growth, yeah, you're going to be fine. That's not really the way our industry is. I think for us, a good year is north of 50% a year, yeah, which for any other business is pretty freaking solid.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's, and for us, it's a wall of revenue, right? It's like this, people don't rip this stuff out. And so the journey for us has been particularly difficult because energy companies are slow to adopt new technology. They're very careful. They're very conservative in their tech choices. And the reason we have cloud on our website is that, yeah, like every other industry has moved on from that and is, you know, talking about AI now. And energy companies are finally like, well, I think we can do this cloud thing. This is good. So we've got to meet our customers where they are.
Yeah. What is that? How does that trend? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
My question was then, how does that translate? Because you are in the backyard of where your customers are. So that's a plus.
Sure.
But at the same time, as a startup founder, you have to be as close to your customers as possible, but you also have to be close to funding. And so how do you make that trade-off operating out of Texas, where clearly you need to be there because this is the center for energy, but at the same time, you need to make sure you are close to capital. How do you do that trade-off in your mind as you grow the business?
We took funding at a slower pace because really what we're fundamentally building is a business. Yeah. Not a capital printing machine.
Yeah.
Or a capital ingestion machine, should we say.
So what is interesting about your business is it's a very specific vertical, energy sector. Clearly, they're going to be enterprise deals because I'd imagine there's not a lot of SMB energy companies that are going to swipe the credit card for $30 a month. So this is like big enterprise deals, very specific vertical. When you are doing that, like for the other founders that are going after specific verticals like this, like how do you think about go-to-market? What's go-to-market look like for you guys for such a, like it's a double-edged sword. On one hand, there's 100 customers and that's everything. On the other hand, there's only 100 customers and that's everything. So
yeah, I think in a sector like ours, right? So we hear definitely ex-consultants, other people I've known from Houston who dream of starting their own business, et cetera. They want to throw their hat in the ring. And I think the big thing I would say is this is a haul. You yeah. have to have credibility, and the credibility is built by years of marketing and years of having been in the business plus successful customers. There aren't a lot of shortcuts. If you enter at 30, be prepared to exit at 50. And I think that that's probably the big thing. And then just like any other tech company, there's ups and downs. I think I read once somewhere that at a startup, there are way more downs than ups. And so you've just got to celebrate the ups as big as you can, because they may be few and far between. I would definitely say that's the case. And so you have to prepare your life for a haul for a decade or more. I think that would probably be the biggest thing I could tell people in our space.
So I think any founder building a SaaS business can relate to that, even if they're not niche vertical or not. We laughed about it before we started recording. I call it the Shawshank crawl to product market fit and to the next stage of growth. how have you learned to navigate that, adapt to that? Like, what's the one piece of advice you'd give to fellow founders for those who are navigating the Shawshank crawl right now?
Probably take care of your mind and your body. I was dating my wife when we started the company, and she's a psychiatrist. And I imagine, yeah.
I don't even know where this sentence is going, but I'm like, oh, this is good.
As it might be expected, having a psychiatrist in the family, that you will learn how important that mental health is and how important it is not to go that route alone. And I think that has been incredibly helpful. And then the body, right? Like, I gained 20, 30 pounds, I feel like, in the first year. And then I managed to keep it steady for a while. And then COVID happened. And it was interesting. When asked last year what I would do if we exited, if we sold the company or something like that, I said I'd probably, you know, go to a day spa for 6 months, eat nothing but healthy food, lose a bunch of weight, exercise, and feel good about myself. My wife observes to me about a month ago, hey, remember when we had that conversation last year? You've been eating your own cooked food. You have lost a bunch of weight, and you might be in a better place as a result. So I was fortunate in a way to have the opportunity to focus on my mind and on my body during COVID, because I had 2 extra hours in my day from the commute. Mm-hmm. I think having done that from the beginning would have made me a saner person and a kinder person over the last few years.
Yeah, I think this is a consistent theme I've seen in this very young podcast, but also just in talking to founders. I think by the time you hit a million ARR, you start to realize that your own well-being impacts the well-being of the company. And then you start to take it a lot more seriously than what you initially thought you needed to do.
That's right. You initially thought you wanted to leave it all out on the field every day.
Yeah.
And man, like, some days you need a day off.
Yeah. This is something that, like, I wish more founders realize, like, we're essentially pro athletes. And when you think about pro athletes, they don't just play the game nonstop for 90 hours and then go play the game again. They train, they play the game, and then they go celebrate, and then they go train, mm-hmm. and then they play the game, and mm-hmm. then celebrate. And those are the three. You have to train like an athlete, play like an athlete, win like an athlete, celebrate like an athlete. You need to do all those things. If you don't do all those things, you're essentially just doing the game time footage all the time. And no one does that. That's an ineffective way to lead or play the game at all.
Right. Absolutely. And like you touched on, the people who you're leading expect some things out of you that you just can't give if you're running at 102% all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this was super helpful. I know founders will resonate with this a lot because they're going through a similar journey as you. Where can people connect with you if they wanted to ask you questions or learn more about Molecule?
Yeah, absolutely. I love assisting founders wherever I can. I think it's a way to give back to the people who helped me by paying it forward. Hit me up on LinkedIn, Samir Saleja on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in the product and want to learn more about it, check out our website, www.molecule.io.
Awesome. Samir, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for being honest about the Shawshank crawl and sharing the tips that you've learned as you're still navigating the journey. And that's the point of this podcast, to bring founders that are going through it to, so others can know that we're all in it together. If you liked this episode, please let us know by tweeting out this episode and mentioning us. There's a click to tweet link in the episode description. And remember, everyone needs a strategy for their life and their business, but with us, yours will be unstoppable. Thank you for joining. I'll see you in the next episode.